The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, everybody. It is the favorite time of the week, and it is the best Tuesday you've had all, actually not year, but it's certainly the best Tuesday you've had all week.
It doesn't seem real that it can be 2025.
It is, in fact, 2025, and how crazy is it that, it is the first, is this the first Tuesday of the year? I think it is. Wasn't New Year's a Wednesday? I got to do math. Let's not even, it was
no.
Seven, it's, I think maybe not, maybe not. Yeah, probably not. Whatever.
I mean, it might be.
I thought New Year's happened on Wednesday.
It is the second. So. No, it is the first Tuesday. You're
this
right.
It's the first Tuesday we've had all year. All right.
It's the best one, too.
The best Tuesday you've had all year. I like it. I don't know if we can say that anymore, but we can say it now. So, perfect.
I like it.
Well, Matt, here we are, 2025.
Yep.
And I'm just really curious to know, like, what is on? So, we have got stuff to talk about. Looking at what is the market eyeballing for 2025?
I think that'd be a great thing to look at because investors want to
know. I want to know what you're eyeballing for 2025. So this,
outside of the markets,
I'm gonna take a moment for everybody to just first. We're gonna put Matt on the spot.
Okay,
I'm a big goals guy.
Yeah,
right. I'm a firm believer that you should, if you want something to happen in your life, that you need to write it down and figure out a path to get there. And there's something about putting it in writing that radically changes the probability of it becoming true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe in written goals.
Yeah.
So I also believe in asking people, since I believe in it strongly, like just straight up cornering them and be like, so man, hey, you're stuck in the studio and live. So you got anything that personally you would like to see happen in your life in 2025?
I think one of the ones that I'm kind of shooting for is just core strength, right? Like you sit at a desk 8 hours a day, your core strength can kind of start to dissipate on you. And so one of the things that I'm going to target this year is just finding 10, 15 minutes a day to do a little bit of core work so that the back doesn't want to jump out, feel a little bit better physically.
Okay. Yep. So how will you measure success?
If I'm still exercising at the end of 2025, it'll be a success.
Okay. So this, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call vague answers. He's like, what does success look like?
If I'm spending 10 to 15 minutes a day all year.
Oh, no, I am. If you did that, it would work. So,
yeah.
So is success then, what do we say, like 5 days a week or better with 15 minutes or more of exercise? Is that the target?
We'll go with 10 minutes or more.
Yeah, I don't even think it needs to be that, especially for core work. It's amazing how anything at all will move the needle.
Yeah.
You know, when you've done nothing, folks are under this impression, like in order to become fit, you have to spend hours and hours and hours a week in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's true. I think the fit look happens in the kitchen. I think you gotta, fitness is just.
The one area I've been pretty decent at is doing a lot of walking. Like the wife and I will take the kid out. We'll walk pretty consistently. Been doing that for a lot of years. But walking is more cardio, right? Like you're ish. And there's no core work in there. So it's like, got to strengthen some muscles up. Yeah. So
somebody out there, I'll say it for them, you know, throw a rucksack on. All of a sudden, it's amazing to me how much if you carry a loaded backpack. So you put like 25, 30 pounds on your back, even walking.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of, it's really interesting because the amount of benefit increases significantly, but you don't get the same impact on joints. Yes, you're carrying more weight,
right,
but it's not at an impact level. Walking is so much better from an impact perspective than running in terms of like what happens to your joints if you're overweight.
Something I've been really actually thinking about doing just because you get the added benefit of when you kill a deer in the bottom of a canyon, It's like I can actually put that on my back and walk out of here and not feel horrible.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ulterior motives.
Yeah. I thought that's just why you brought a friend.
No.
Matt's always like, well, we got to get out of here. All right, you pick that thing up. I'll see you at the top. Like, yep. Wait a minute.
Sounds like something I would do, too.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you are, so the exercise, that's a biggie.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Anything else on the list?
Yeah, there's stuff on the list, but that's where I think the main focus, at least stuff that I'm willing to share over air, I think that's...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of them are more personal.
Yeah.
One of the goals I had for 2024 was read a book, and I made it halfway through a book, so I color... when I write my goals, I'll go in and review them. And then the way that, you know, I determine, so green, if I highlight my goal in green, it's like, oh, you accomplished that. Yellow is like, you did it halfway. And then red is like, you didn't even touch this one at all.
I literally thought I was, when you said it, the way it came out, you said, I wanted to read a book and I'm coloring. And I went, like a coloring book? You're reading a coloring book?
Hey, well, you know what? I should highlight that green because I read my son a bunch of books.
Yeah, right.
It might be Dr. Seuss. Now, is it really improving myself? No, but I love to write, but I hate to read.
That's really something.
It's really weird.
So, personally, I started to do Audible,
mm-hmm.
right? And talk about weird discoveries in the category of this will like mess with people's head. Not every narrator for audiobooks has the same cadence, right?
Nope.
So you can't universally do this. But I found myself the other day, drives my family nuts, by the way, because every now and then I'll get in the car and it will like automatically launch Audible and they'll hear the speed at which I'm listening to it.
Okay.
And so I'm currently listening to an Audible book at 325% speed.
I read at 325% speed because I'll just skip over an entire paragraph when I'm reading. Like I actually have that. I think that might be why I really don't enjoy reading is I'm so impatient that like I'll just skip two or three sentences and get to the next one. And so this year when I read half a book, I did it in like 2 or 3 hours because I'm just like flying through the pages. And then I burn out and I don't touch it.
It takes more concentration to know to skip words than it does to just read them.
I am too impatient to actually read every single word.
All right. So the beatings will continue
yep.
until your patience improves.
Yeah. Patience. Right? Always a struggle.
Boy, that's an interesting – boy, that's stuff that I didn't need to know.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, really? So if I send you something, you're not even reading it.
Yeah. I always get the concept.
Do ya? Do ya?
I'll go back and skim read a couple skip like, paragraphs until I get it.
I read it 7 times really fast. Eventually, it counts as one read.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot.
Life's too short to read every word.
Oh, man. I just say read fast. But like same thing, when I listen, I'm usually doing stuff. So I do a fair amount of walking in between workout days. So I usually cover a couple, 3 miles a day walking plus working out every other day. And that's when I listen a lot of the time. And yeah, it's at 325, you think at first, yeah, it will drive you nuts.
Yeah.
Like, cause it's weird. Like I'm listening to Chipmunks. The crazy thing is if you start at 1x speed, you'll daydream. It's too slow. Listening to somebody talk at that pace, too slow. So you start cranking it up and then you start to adjust. And then you crank it a little bit faster and realize you, and so you're perfectly capable of thinking at really high speeds. So I could still think faster than the narrator at 325%. So once you've sort of attuned your ears to hear it, I couldn't even, it used to be 2x was too much. It just sounded like gibberish. Now, 3x, like I can understand it all. So it's just interesting how the processor speed will adapt.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it gets through a lot more books. And so, but I happen to be more of an auditory learner, which I think is not typical.
Probably not.
Yeah. So go figure.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was an auditory learner until, somebody tells you a joke, you remember it. Or I learned on the phone. You call me on the phone, I don't see your face, I probably remember your name. If you're talking to me and I first meet you, I have to really try hard to remember names because I see all the other details.
Are you ready for the dirty confession of this Tuesday?
You don't even know names of anybody. You don't even know my name. You wrote it down.
Never listen to an Audible book.
Oh.
Not even one.
Well,
actually, that's a lie. I listened to one on my way. I was driving to Pendleton, and it was take the test to be able to be licensed. Yeah. My wife almost jumped out of the vehicle at 60 miles an hour. But I did, I did learn, actually, pretty well off of listening to that. So maybe I'm learning the same way you are.
Could be. All I know is this. If you consider the value of, like, if you were to take a college course and consider how much material you consume, if you were to listen to or go through a book a month, that's 12 per year, then over the course of like 6 years, you end up with a doctorate level amount of information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing how much more you consume. Now, I am really a nonfiction guy. Primarily, almost everything is nonfiction.
Yeah.
So now maybe I'm missing out on some stuff. I'm sure people are going to say, yeah, you're missing out on stuff, but whatever. All right. So that, but anyway, the big goal is exercise. And then I'm going to encourage you to like maybe read. Yeah.
I went back to writing. I couldn't do it.
How can you write? You have to go back and read what you wrote.
That I can do, oddly.
Okay.
Yeah.
More interesting insight with Dave and Matt.
Yeah. Huh. I'm on to another book and just going crazy on it, writing a lot. So
now the good news is he does investment research with much greater depth.
Yeah, that's well. I think it's because like when you're just reading like someone else's book, I'm the type that's like, well, let's get to the conclusion here. But with the stocks, right? You could go so many different avenues, and because it's so broad,
maybe you're choosing the wrong books. Like there's nothing in it for you. You're just like, I don't care.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
But the stocks, you're all like, no, I got to get this right. Because if I buy this thing,
yeah, like the stock part, there's so much to consider, and you can formulate your own opinion. But if I'm reading a book, there's an ending. Like I don't get to manipulate the ending of the book. I can change the outcome.
Books and like tearing pages out.
Yeah.
This page is garbage.
I read a book and it doesn't have a great ending, I'm just so mad that I wasted all that time. I'm just totally furious. I'm like, this is horrible. Who wrote this? Like,
where did this radical contempt for everybody else come from?
I don't know. deep-seated issues.
No kidding. I was like, I'm learning something about Matt here in real time.
Yep.
So, oh, man.
That's why I like to write. I get to control the outcome of how it ends.
I want to make the calls here.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, you know what? Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
I think what we ought to do, we'll grab a break. When we come back, I want to get a sense of, okay, does the market have goals? How might it set them?
I think it does.
I think it could. What's it thinking about? We're going to talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where you didn't get to hear what we talked about in between. but you could if you wanted to check out the podcast that will... Actually, I don't know if the podcast captures that. The video does.
Yeah.
Right? And it is 2025, and one of my goals is to publish the video every week from the True Wealth Show.
Nice.
And so I will encourage all of our listeners. You can grab the podcast at littlejohnfs.com, but also go find Little John Financial in YouTube and get subscribed there. And then you can tell all of your friends that you remember when they said they were going to make this channel. I can't tell you if it's any good. Right. We're going to try to make it good, right? But we're going to cover stuff.
Like.
All right, Matt.
Yeah, where'd we leave off?
Well, we left off with you've got great goals. I very cleverly avoided saying any of my own, and then we started talking about the markets and what the market's goals were.
Yeah. Does the market have a goal?
I don't know that the market being a non-sentient thing has a goal.
Right.
But isn't it interesting to see that the market does seem to have some themes, and might those themes play out?
Yeah.
And if we're an investor with a goal of our own, those themes are still relevant to us.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wonder, like, you look at all the big players, right? Fidelity, we go down the list.
Right.
And major hedge fund managers. And you look at how much money they move in the system mm-hmm. compared to, like, your average DIY investor. Mm-hmm. And we ask the question, does the market have any motives? And I'm like, well, maybe it's not the market that has the motives. It's the big players who are kind of controlling the market that have motives.
Oh, for sure.
And so it's like, here's the reality. And people talk about the stock market completely collapsing and going to zero. And I'm like, who wins in that instance, right? Like, these guys that are managing these funds, they want to make money. Like, at the end of the day, people want to make money. And so how do you make money? Investing.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like,
I think that you're onto something. Like,
the motive is make money.
There's this fundamental flaw. When I hear, so one of the things that shows, it shows up in political debate. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to tie this all together really weird, even down to like fires in California.
Sure.
Okay, which are going on right now. We're not obtuse to that. So if you hear somebody that says, well, you know, all the billionaires just want everybody else to be in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that doesn't serve billionaires to keep everybody else in poverty.
No.
Right? And so that is born mostly out of sort of anger and frustration and naivety.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, there are billionaires that just were in the right place at the right time. They work hard, but what they were capable of doing is leveraging some kind of value to a very high level,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's what resulted in billions, and it's the way capital gets magnified in our society. It's usually not cash. It's usually equity, right? Now, the same thing can happen. Like, let's say you bought a bare piece of dirt and then you built a house on it. And, you know, the dirt costs you $50,000 and it costs you $200,000 in materials to build your house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the house, when it's finished, is worth $500,000 if you were to sell it. Okay. But you're not selling it. You move into the house. So what's your cost? About $250,000 to buy a house worth $500,000. You created $250,000 of equity in that process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now we're ignoring taxes and other consequences, but in our example, that would be the case. Okay. So if you take a company and you start it and you develop it, and then somebody's willing to buy your company for $1 billion and you're the owner of it, you don't have to sell it, but on paper, you're a billionaire, right?
Because
you have an asset worth $1 billion that you own. That's sort of what happens. Okay. And this is where we run into the quandary of, like, why people say, like, we need a wealth tax. It's like, so you're going to force somebody to sell it? Right? Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
How,
like, you can't own things now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, oh, well, what if you have equity in your house? Can we force you to pay taxes on that? And everybody goes, well, that's different. You know, no, it's different because you didn't want to be wrong on the point. That's really what it comes down to. Or it's different because you think somebody else has more than they should, and so in your judgment, that person with more than you think they should have should pay it to other people. So you're in favor of redistributing because you disagree with somebody else.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. Okay. Now, let's go back to the billionaire conversation, because that's just how billionaires get created. What do billionaires generally want? To stay billionaires, generally.
Yeah.
Right? They want to stay independently wealthy enough to maintain the lifestyle that they're into. There are people that end up, you know, somehow inheriting lots of money and they become benevolent and start giving it away. But don't be confused, like Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, that's worth, you know, billions and billions. When they start giving it away, they kind of have to, because otherwise the government will take it in the form of taxes. And then the government will spend it on things that they largely disagree with. So they create their own foundations and they donate to the foundations. And then the foundations go and kind of do the work that those folks wanted to be done anyway. So they can still influence with their money.
Yeah.
So what does a billionaire want? They want influence and they want to stay a billionaire. And oftentimes they want to prevent somebody else from knocking them off their pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
That's where those
things come from. Staying on top.
Staying on top. That doesn't mean squashing everybody else. It means structurally preventing them from usurping their position.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What does every political dictator at the top want? To stay at the top.
So and they it's put a pretty hard to stay at the top if the stock market's...
Yeah. You think about North Korea and it's like, well, that's a military regime, right? It's a dictatorship and there's no material means of production. And because of the way politically sanctions have occurred, they don't have a whole lot of resources. And so they have to kind of enforce that through literally military force, right? And so mm-hmm. it's low standards of living and high starvation and other issues, okay? In the United States, how do we do it? Through political mechanisms. Get rules put in place. Like, do you think Facebook was going to object to fact-checking on information? No, they got bazillions of dollars. And it means that the competition can't afford to do it.
Yep.
Right? So that happens to be something that serves them because it keeps competition out. They'll just price it however they have to price it so that it works.
Yeah.
But it's a moat for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what billionaires want. So I think that your original question, like I tap danced all around this.
No,
man.
You're good.
Your original question was, what about these big players with all the money in the market? Are they moving stuff around?
And the answer is yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, right? Because they need to protect yeah. and yeah. stay at the top.
Now, do they get it right every time?
No.
No, they don't.
It's impossible to.
Yeah. In fact, I don't know of any investment companies that bat 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Zero of them.
Yeah.
And so that's really important to understand as well, is that this is not about never swinging and missing, right? Right? There's no perfect game in investing, to my knowledge. What there is making sound investment decisions consistently over time, minimizing losses quickly and maximizing gains when possible.
Yeah, and I think part of, you know, what we wanted to do today with this show is trying to look a little bit into the future and look at where we're at. Because like you said, if we can't bat 1,000 and we're not always going to make the right call, how do we make the best call that we can?
Yes.
That's the key.
And isn't it interesting because so much of the value in long-term investing, one, it happens by being long-term, typically. And I want to distinguish between investing and trading because
right.
I think that that's important to understand. But the other is, it's the things that you do that you can control. Like, you can't control the markets. And
nope.
we can talk about these things, but just because we lay out a whole thesis of what's going on in the market doesn't compel the market to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We talk all day long about this thing. You know what the market cares about? Whatever it cares about. It ain't us.
Yeah, it has to overlook all those things because it's constantly changing and trying to price in future changes.
Exactly. So what are some of the things thematically that you think the market is looking at? So, because why, right? Why? Because we can talk about it anyway, even though it doesn't affect the markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all would like to believe, but what if good decisions did help?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you're making good decisions, your outcome is better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's what we talk about all the time, by the way, for our investors that when they hire us, like, one of the things that they're looking for is, can you help make good decisions about risk management, good
mm-hmm.
decisions about risk mitigation, right? So it already happened. Now what?
Yep.
And then also looking forward, probability management, okay? And
yeah.
Let's be clear about
that's
something,
a big one.
There's no guarantees in any of this.
No.
Ever. Like, even the person's like, oh, I just buy the index. Look, the indexes have worked well until they don't.
Hey, let me tell you something about the index. Here's a stat for you. The top 10 companies in the S&P 500 now make up over 30% of the entire index.
Right.
And did you know that that's the highest level that we've seen since the dot-com bubble in the 90s?
Yeah. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity. Can we play a game, talk about what the market sees,
mm-hmm.
but can we play the game of comparing this to the 90s?
Okay, let's do it.
Because, I mean, that's not a goal. But boy, I mean, like, they say history doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. All right, so there are things that are similar. There are things that are different. I think we should unpack some of that.
Let's do that.
And we'll talk about what the market sees. But we'll also talk about taking this critical profit break for the station. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You're going to have to say that again, but now that the microphones are hot.
I can do that.
Okay, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in the studio with
Matt Dixon.
And we're talking about start of the new year. We've covered some goals. We've covered some conspiracy. Not really conspiracy, just that there's all these folks that, you know, kind of get the wrong idea about what motivates the markets, right?
Yeah.
The reality is markets are motivated by all kinds of things. Tons of money is moving through. Institutions have their reasons for doing things. And then the retail investor oftentimes has very different reasons.
Right? Yeah.
And so
it's often fueled by greed.
Yeah.
Just
often.
Pure greed.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to blame somebody right now. Like when you hear the headlines about like, why could go buy Bitcoin, go buy Tesla, go buy NVIDIA. Though none of these are recommendations, by the way. But like the headlines that say this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you hear the astronomical returns and you go, well, I want that.
Yeah.
Right. And so it really does, through greed, tempt you into that kind
of
behavior.
The problem is most of the time, by the time you hear about it, like that huge run to the top is kind of fizzling.
It's always my joke. It used to be the shoeshine guy. Now it's the Uber driver. It's like when you're getting stock tips from your Uber driver, like it's not a secret,
mm-hmm.
right? That's not a tip anymore. That's the thing everybody knows.
Right. It's already been logged in the history books, and you're right? Just chasing what could have been if you had gotten into it early.
What I wonder is, like, if you're so awesome at investing, why are you driving Uber?
Yeah. Yeah, if you're getting stock advice from
your... You don't have time to drive Uber. You're going out there and making tons in the, you know, trading in the market.
Yeah.
So let's think this. This is always my favorite, right? When you, if you even see an ad that says, you know, this 24-year-old math genius cracked the code of the stock market, click here to subscribe. And you're like, look, if you crack the code of the market, you don't share it.
Well...
Right? You just print money. Like, because if you share it, it stops being an exploit because everybody has it, and then it's not an exploit anymore.
Yeah. And if you've already made all of your money, why do you need a $30 subscription?
Exactly. And so there's just, again, it's back to billionaires want to keep the man down. It's like, but this 24-year-old wants to share the wealth. It's like, no, you numbskull. Think about it. You're just advertising fodder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that slays me. It's like, it doesn't work that way. Anyway, we're starting to talk about indexes, and we're talking about like the late 90s versus today.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this is interesting, Matt, is to me, I started my career in the late 90s, and I remember the dot-com bubble, the Y2K scare, and then the 2000 to 2002 collapse of everything. And the NASDAQ like fell by 80%. It was just bloodbath.
Yeah.
And now we have this AI craze where it's like if somebody slaps AI on the side of it, it's like, oh, well, then it's going to sell.
Cloud-based services.
Yeah. So, you know, what – you started to tell me, and I was like, no, please, just share this
with
our
listeners.
Yeah,
right when we were coming back from the break, I was talking about the fact – and I didn't realize it was this high, but the retail investor. So that just means the average
non-institutional,
Joe. Yeah. The person who's investing – now makes up 25% of the volume of the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, why is that? You know, obviously greed is part of it. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that you now have all of these zero commission trading platforms like, you know, Robinhood and some of the others that are out there.
The proliferation of the discount broker.
Right, because you used to have to pay for every single trade, or you might have to call someone and say, hey, go buy this for me. now people, you know, they have it at their fingertips. And if you can jump into something and you make 5% and you sell it, and it's like, that can be addicting, right? Like, look at how addicting gambling is in this country. And I think a lot of people have taken what was investing and they've literally turned it into gambling, where it's like, well, I don't have to go to the casino because I can buy this and sell it tomorrow and shuffle this here and shuffle that there. And so we're seeing it. We're seeing tons of people flooding in. And like you mentioned earlier, they're buying Bitcoin and they're buying all of these speculative investments, hoping that it continues to just go higher, higher, and higher. And it has really changed the landscape of the market.
Yeah.
So
it's,
but it's not just the retail.
Was that hot? Is it the by the trades or by the dollar volume?
Trade volume. So 25% of the trade volume.
So in trade volume, it's not just the trades. It's the total dollar. That's really the question. Is it dollar volume in the trades,
right?
Or is it just trade volume? Period.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I wanted to look at sector differentials because you made this comment about how much has changed in the weightings of the indexes.
Right.
Back in 1999, information technology was 20% of the S&P, and today it's 28%. But here's the interesting one. There was no communication services, and now that's 10%. Google counts as communication.
Yeah, and right. I think
this is also
Facebook,
tech. So that means it's up to 38%.
Facebook's the biggest one, I think, in that whole.
And so if
index.
We look at that and say, okay, well, if we use the communications and information tech, you're at almost 40% of that index is now tech. That's double the weighting it was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. That's actually kind of an alarming
thought.
Well,
it's,
but
I think
it
really
also makes sense,
to understand,
though.
Right? Because tech has been
think about the
theme of the economy.
Paper sales. Like back in the 80s and 70s, everything was being put on paper and put in a file cabinet. Now
matrix printers.
Yeah, and now everything's in a cloud somewhere floating around in space. So it's like, well, maybe it is actually worth 40% of the entire market because of the fact that half of business now is being done digitally.
Oh, I suspect over the next few years, tech, like technology as a sector of the S&P, is going to be broken into pieces. And we'll have like hardware versus software. And we'll have other components of tech that become subsectors. And it won't just be limited to, I think there's 12 sectors or 11 sectors of the S&P 500 right now. And I think we could see like 14 when it's all said and done.
Well, the reality is, it's getting more and more powerful by the day. And I mentioned this to you in private the other day. It's like, hey, how long have we really been using like ChatGPT to the effect that we've been using it?
When you say it's getting more powerful, the indexes, what are you talking about?
Oh, tech. Like
tech.
Technology
okay, so
is just
well,
a, yeah. Like,
I mean, it is our economy.
Well, and
it's
keeps,
a huge portion.
It's able to do more and more by the day. And it's like, how could that in theory really shrink? You'd have to try and regulate it away. That's really the only thing that's going to slow it down, in my opinion.
Yeah, with the massive
and how can you even do that?
Processing power. Well, I'll tell you what would force it. We don't really think about this as what would force
the regulation. Yeah, what?
Well, not just regulation. What else could force it back? And it could be power constraint. Right.
Maybe.
If you look at how much data centers have to be fed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If there wasn't adequate power. This, by the way, remember I told you to tie it back to the fires?
Okay? Mm-hmm.
This is one of those issues. Like, we have these massive urban concentration areas. You look at California, and it's just going to be such a hard, big picture discussion. Like, by the way, this is a hard conversation because like it feels like you're avoiding the human aspects and the tragedy that's going on. Like, people are losing homes and potentially lives and pets and stuff, and it's like massive hardship, and it's bad. Right. If you don't know that just north of Santa Monica and Palisade Park area is like on fire, it's like 1,000 acres and burning fast.
Oh, wow.
Something like that. Anyway, it was and the winds are expected to get higher and it's just nasty down there. So we're going to see look for higher insurance premiums again, because you're going to have a huge swath of California that goes down in flames, literally.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of urban concentration, but then changing weather patterns when you pave a whole area like that.
Mm-hmm.
And is that what is causing climate change? Is it CO2 in the air, or is that really just the power brokers that can use the institutes of government to push around different, push where money goes in the ecosystem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know what happens on the ground? Look at the average ground temperature when you start to put a lot more blacktop in areas.
Yeah.
So all of those things, you know, can, you know, you put heat sinks somewhere and it changes the flow of where things go, mm-hmm. right? So atmospheric adaptation and, you know, the long term on it to be determined. Yeah. But nevertheless, you can see how it changes those elements at play.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'm, well, trying to contextualize that and what else is going on. It's just markets have to figure out where market, you know, where the resource.
Here's one I want to pick your brain on, right? So back in the 90s, we kind of had some loose monetary policy, right? And so, and it helped boom the economy. Do you feel like with Trump getting into office and talking about trying to deregulate a little bit and wanting low interest rates, do you think that like we might actually see the rates continue to decline? And could that kind of maybe push some people to invest in more kind of high risk and speculative investments? Like, could that drive some of this, do you think? Or?
Yeah, I think we have, I still think we have an inflationary backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't think the tariffs are going to be as bad as people say, but if one of the ways that you, like the federal government's kind of out of options, right? It has to figure out a way to contain spending. And it has to find a way to devalue all of this debt to get back into some sense of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so my take on this is that the private sector needs to do more of the lift rather than government, right? Because government doesn't typically produce anything, right? The private sector conjures and produces, and then the government manages and regulates. And so the management and regulation isn't production. And so every time somebody says, well, what about government jobs? It's like, well, the government still has to take from the taxpayer to fund the people in the government. So that government job didn't conjure anything. If we're borrowing money to fund government jobs, then temporarily that can be a booster shot to GDP, but it's at the expense of the long-term debt. Well, how do you manage longer-term debt? Devalue the currency. That's mm-hmm. an inflationary prospect, though.
Right.
And so that's what I think is that if you're talking about less regulation, then you would expect the private sector to move faster. But if it's moving faster, rates are going to go up to contain it.
Mm.
Right. So I don't see
like a way to keep the rates low. And
you look back into like the 70s and going into the 80s and where rates were. But then you look at what growth rates had to be in order to make all those things work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no perfect balance to this. Right. If you get rid of regulations, then things can inflate faster. If things are inflating faster, then you raise rates in order to contain them.
So would you say that's actually then like a decent risk that we're facing, where the monetary policies kind of do actually loosen up and the spending drives inflation?
Yeah,
do you think that's like probable maybe?
I think that right now the Fed's on course following the data that it has to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. You probably don't remember. Why would you remember this from the 90s? Right. You were just, you know, a pup. But Alan Greenspan introduced a new concept to the way the Fed evaluated the marketplace.
Okay.
Prior to Greenspan, they had not considered with significance productivity in their equations. They were trying to explain why they seemed to have this massive economic growth, but they didn't seem to have a lot of new jobs. And the explanation ended up being a factor of productivity. And so that became a measurement now, is productivity per unit, right? How much does
it work? How do you even measure that?
Well, they had their different methodologies for it. But, you can kind of look at like how many workers in a company and what was the gross product of the company.
Oh.
And if the gross product goes up without workers, then one of the explanations is increased productivity per worker. Well, it makes sense. We electronified it.
And that's been a huge news topic lately. It's like everyone's become so much more efficient and able to do so much more.
That's the magic of AI, right? Mm-hmm. Think about radical productivity gains. Just like when the internet showed up and we could move information quickly. Now it's not just moving information. Now we can process it quickly.
Does that put people out of jobs, or does it create new jobs because of the like just massive amounts of efficiency?
Super awesome question. I want you to hang on to this. I want to grab a break because we got to take our last one. So we'll come back to that, right? Does this generate job loss?
Okay. Big piece to consider.
Big piece, because that's also in the economic equation. Job loss would be deflationary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So hold that thought, because the answer is less straightforward than you think. I'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240. Here we are.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You what?
I could like try and predict a few areas for you.
So, guys, we're welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Home stretch here. A few more minutes left. And Matt asked this great question. We're talking about productivity increases. And the proliferation of AI right now, it's kind of the market theme.
Mm-hmm.
And does it cost jobs?
Yeah.
And so first I ask you, Matt, does it cost jobs?
And I said, yeah, it will. But I think it's contextual. Yeah.
And then what?
Right. So like, let's just kind of like play it out with a real life example, because that's easier to understand. So you look at AI and it's able to do some of the more basic tasks way faster than humans, and probably with more accuracy. So it's going to eat into some jobs, like those monotonous jobs where you're kind of doing the same thing over and over again, and you can train a computer to do it. That person might lose their job. However, you got to ask yourself, and we already talked about this earlier on the show, where are the opportunities for job growth? AI could be slowed down because there's just not enough energy to power it, right? If you're going to create the energy that's needed to run quantum computers and ChatGPT and all these other things that just consume and consume and consume, and your EVs where you're driving an electric vehicle instead of a gas-powered vehicle, it's like you could see a huge job creation in just like the energy department, right? Like someone's got to be there, boots on the ground, to make sure that these electrical facilities are up and running and working and being maintained. So where one job goes away, oftentimes another job pops up.
And ladies and gentlemen, I think he's got it.
Yay.
Right? There's a concept called creative destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's the idea that jobs are always at risk like this.
The right.
Technology takes jobs. This is so another kind of cheap shot here, but it was one of my issues. My understanding is the longshoremen strike that occurred before Christmas on the East Coast was about wages, but also about not wanting to mechanize or automate as much of the longshoremen's jobs. They didn't want robots taking jobs.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So in that respect, what they were doing was trying to negotiate a specified amount of production per labor unit.
Mm.
Okay, they were going to capitate productivity. If
that
you think
seems
about
like
that,
a dangerous
right?
bet, right? Because if you're not working and you're not there, and then the person who's running the show looks at it and says, well, if you're going to be this expensive and troublesome, why not just order the robot who's not going to strike?
But that's the point of a union at this point, was to, you know, well, you can't bring in a robot and you can't make us work any harder than X.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you know, and maybe I'm oversimplifying things, to which I would say, all right, educate me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the reality is that this is a regulatory constraint imposed by the union. Right. And that was, you know, through the power of negotiation, they managed to get that. The interesting thing is that they do have a monopoly over the ports. And so that's where some of the issue comes into play. It's like, okay, so you get a monopoly and then you can stronghold it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not natural market any longer.
No.
Okay. So that's my issue that we get into, is that's not a free market. Okay. That's a manipulated market. And it's an artificial input variable that goes into the cost equation now, and it ripples through the system, right? Because it's no longer natural price discovery, because somebody's strong arming it.
Yeah, and it's inflationary too.
Well, like, it will be, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to pay more for less.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, with this is sort of the backdrop or concept, creative destruction, you would think, will whole new jobs and new areas of the economy will be created, because there are now tools that exist that enable things that you couldn't do before,
mm-hmm.
right? And like, we don't really build horse and buggies anymore.
Right.
That's a big deal, right? There used to be lamplighters. Okay, big deal, not anymore.
Yeah.
And so as we advance and technology, like I think that, you know, if we look into the future, I'm convinced that it's going to be about power generation, power storage, and power movement are going to be keys to our economy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you look at where populations settle, it's going to be, well, power generation is going to be generated offsite more than likely, and it's going to have to be moved in.
It's going to be really interesting to see how we handle the housing shortage in the future, right? Because it continues to become like more and more of an issue.
It's, well, it's so complex.
Like, it is.
Having been down in LA over Christmas, and I now realize like you have this housing cost, but also the cost of high density and moving people around, mm-hmm. and resources and goods. And so like I could see worlds where like you're not allowed to drive anymore. Right.
Yeah.
Or if you are, you're not allowed to be the driver. Like Tesla, everybody's got these smart vehicles out there. And they just program the city and say, well, your car drives for you and it will route faster and safer than you can, because humans make stupid decisions and they, you know, get greedy and cut somebody off and do dumb stuff. And so it's like, well, just eliminate that. You can't touch the wheel.
Hmm.
You know, and so it will be the maximum throughput that we can engineer, and you can't drive. You get outside of the cities, maybe you can, but inside the cities, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
I just don't know how long.
I think that in my lifetime, at least, we'll definitely see like these smart cities popping up, kind of like what you're talking about, where it's like, well, we know that we have a housing problem, and if we build it this way, we could, in theory, you know, gather quite a few taxes and get stuff sold off for cheap. I don't know. I think we're onto something there.
Yeah. Well, I just know that the theme is not terribly optional.
Right.
Like you're gonna find ourselves structurally forced into circumstances where it's like we need places to put people, we gotta move people around, and we gotta feed them and do all these other things.
Yep.
So, but anyway, look, I'm looking at the clock and the music's playing. That means we are out of time. So the first episode of the year, and it flew by as always.
Wow, that was fast.
All right, gang. Well, since we are out of time, if you want to catch up, see me after class. Matt, how do they reach us?
541-375-0898, or go to the website at littlejohnfs.com.
All right, well, until next time, we're out of time. So this has been Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Happy New Year.